C-News we need to catch up on. Missed out on Carnell Tate while you're gone.
Man, that really swung in a hurry the wrong way.
Felt like something that was set up for Ohio State to win all along. That, you know, we had felt like we had the lead in, but it seemed like the door was always open for Ohio State to close it,
just
close the gap,
the longer
and end up getting
it went
this
on,
guy. Right.
The longer it went on, you were like, okay, well, you keep building this momentum, but you're not really capitalizing on it, and it just it makes it feel more and more like he's going to end up at Ohio State. And it's hard to blame him. I mean, I feel like the big draw was Nico and a potential large NIL package, but Ohio State, you know, I'm sure if they were able to find a pretty decent NIL package to offer too, they also have top quarterback signed in the next couple classes. They also have everything you could want in a football program. They have, you know, more than Tennessee in that regard. They have a wide receiver coach that has, you know, as good of a track record as pretty much anyone. They have the ability to get you to multiple national championships. Like, it's hard to beat Ohio State in a recruiting battle, especially for a wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, you watched Carnell Tate announce he was going to Ohio State, which, again, makes the most sense for him. And then you see two more, like, top 20 wide receivers or top 20 players overall, top, you know, five wide receivers in the country. Be like, yeah, we're going to go there, too. Mm-hmm. So then they end up with, like, three top 20 overall players all playing wide receiver. You're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. They're just going to continue dominating that position. So that hurt for Tennessee. Then there became like a whole conversation surrounding Tennessee's direction surrounding their NIL collective. Right? And, you know, there's people speculating that Danny White at the top of, you know, Tennessee's athletic department has told Tennessee's coaches to kind of cool it with the Spire stuff. That was kind of what was being talked about. And that's why, you know, was kind of explaining why Tennessee had maybe fallen back to the pack a little bit in terms of landing or, you know, losing some of their momentum, if you will. You know, you saw a guy commit to Clemson. You saw, you know, Tate decide to not come to Tennessee. So you had a couple people that you felt good about at one time all of a sudden not coming to Tennessee. So people started freaking out and panicking and wondering, you know, what the hell's happening. And you looked at the money cannon and was maybe like, okay, maybe this is not going boom as much as we thought anymore for a reason.
I hadn't heard anything about that, but
that was a lot of the discussion. But again, you'd missed out on a couple guys in a row. You know, you missed out on a defensive player to Clemson. You lost an in-state kid, I believe, from Chattanooga to Ole Miss. And then you lose out on Carnell Tate. So it was like three whiffs in a row, and people started panicking, and, you know, maybe there's maybe there's some truth to that. I don't know. Maybe other people are catching up with the NIL stuff, or maybe it's just like, hey, you're not going to beat Ohio State for a wide receiver. Like, I don't care who you have playing quarterback. Like, you're just not going to do it whenever they are, you know, consistently putting in top 15 guys and making it easy by having them, you know, surrounded by elite talent.
I mean, I think that's part of it. I would think it would be more likely that other teams just kind of caught up to an extent, and that levels the playing field as everyone kind of scattered to get their collectives in order. These top programs now all have their collectives in order, and, you know, then it goes back to having to recruit against schools. And right now, again, Tennessee just not in a position to be able to recruit against Ohio State, especially for a receiver.
Right. So, you know, people were a little worried about Tennessee when it came to recruiting, but then, like, you know, you get here to Monday, June 27th, a week later, and you have some momentum of people talking about Tennessee being set to land a five-star in next year's class. Now, exactly who that five-star like is that people are speculating on, it's kind of yet to be seen. Some people think it is Jonathan Echols from IMG. He is a big-time like athlete, the number 8 overall recruit in the class, according to On3. And, you know, their recruiting expert Chad Simmons just, you know, put a prediction in that he's going to come to Tennessee. So people are like, oh, okay, cool. That's cool. That's nice. Then you have, like, Chadavion Bradley, a five-star edge out of – that's a guy out of, like, St. Louis, right?
I
believe that's a guy out of St. Louis. He's out of Missouri.
Yes.
And he announced his top three, and it's Tennessee, South Carolina, and Texas A&M. So, like, you're in the final three there. People think Tennessee is in a really good position with him. So, you know, it's like you got cut out there. Mm-hmm. And then coming up next Monday, July 4th, you have the big five-star offensive lineman that is friends with Nico Francis. I don't know how to say his last name. Mauga? Maga? I don't know. The big Polynesian prince. Yeah, like, I mean, it is Nico's boy, and it seems to be down to Tennessee or USC. And, you know, some are speculating that it will essentially come down to, like, what his family wants to do. Like, if his family is willing to move, then he's coming to Tennessee. If they're not willing to move, he's going to go to USC. But, like, you're still in the mix and in good positions for a couple of five stars. We'll see if you land them, because, like, I think with the money cannon kind of changing things and having Nico on board, I think we're in a different position than we would have been last year, where you're okay with finishing second and third for a lot of the elite guys. And seeing that as a sense of, you know, progress and taking pride in that. I do feel like finishing second for all these guys isn't really a plus anymore.
No, you've evened the playing field with the money. So, like, you should expect to have some of these guys.
And you also have a five-star quarterback. Yeah. That seems to be pretty cool. That seems to, like, have a good connection with some of these guys that is trying to recruit them. So, you know, you have some proof of concept, especially on offense, in terms of, like, hey, we're going to give you big numbers, and, yeah, we can even get you to the NFL, you know, to the NFL via the draft. Come here. On defense, you know, maybe we haven't really proven we can get you to the NFL with this staff, but, like, hey, you got plenty of playing time opportunities, and we'll give you some money. So, like,
You still got Matthew Butler, like, his stock raised to be a draft pick, and Theo Jackson's stock raised enough to be a draft pick. Like,
if I'm a big-time prospect, I'm maybe, like, looking past.
I feel like that's something, though, because neither of those guys, I think, were really all that much on the draft radar before last season.
Okay. I mean, you might be right.
Alante getting taken as early as he did. Like,
yeah, Alante was what, second round? I mean, Alante was a high pick.
Yep. I mean, his stock when he initially arrived at Tennessee was that high, obviously. Right. But then it had dipped back to seventh round to borderline undrafted. So to get that back up there, too, there's a little bit of credit there.
Okay, so, yeah, maybe
Rodney Gardner,
saying,
like,
hey,
he has the track record overall that you can still point to. Is
100%.
His coaching career.
Especially when you're looking, you know, talking about this, you know, Bradley guy who is an edge rusher. Like, yeah, like, you look here at Rodney Gardner. Like, yeah, that's, you know, he's got a track record, like Charlie said, of putting big-time players in the pros. So, you know, we'll see where we end up with these two five-star linemen. At one point, people felt really good about getting both. I think at this point, if you get one, you'll feel pretty good about yourself. If you get both, like, you'll be on top of the world. We'll see. I will say, if we're looking for more positives, and maybe this, you know, becomes a bad soundbite a year or two from now, but I will say that no matter how you feel, like, at least you ain't Florida.
That's definitely going to be a bad soundbite. That's going to be so bad.
at least you ain't Florida, who is, like, looking embarrassing at this point, who is getting clowned when it comes to recruiting, like, who is now all of a sudden, help me, I'm poor when it comes to.
Will you clip this so when Billy Napier is hoisting a national championship trophy
in like four years,
we can just play this?
Yeah. Go ahead and clip that. If Billy Napier.
They're like number one recruiting class that they somehow got.
Yeah, if Billy Napier wins a national title in 4 years at Florida, I'll set myself on fire. Go ahead and make that a board bet, too. I'll set myself on fire. That ain't happening. But, like, you have their NIL getting made fun of basically by, you know, one of the big-time lawyers who handles some of these big-time prospects. You know, that I believe that was a lawyer that, you know, handled Nico's contracts and said, like, Florida's NIL collective is embarrassing. It is basically what he came out and said.
Jeez. think any school that's, like, perceived that the level that they try to perceive themselves at would have a little bit of structure with stuff like this.
Because the problem was not the money, though. Like, it was
no, allegedly the money, like, they turned down $11 million. And these are all just kind of numbers that get floated around, which I guess once these numbers get floated around, we just kind of take them as fact. Because I did see, like, SportsCenter tweeting out, or I guess Instagramming out highlights of Nico and calling him the $8 million man, which we don't know if that's actual or factual or not. But, like, everyone's just decided that Nico was the $8 million quarterback, and everyone's like, okay, yeah, that's cool, we'll run with that. And if you're Tennessee, like, that's fine. Yeah, we helps, you know, a quarterback get paid, because being at the top of our program, in the face of our program, is a profitable situation. It's a valuable position.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that. But yeah, Charlie, like you're saying, the idea was that this quarterback, Jaden Rashada, turned down $11 million from Florida, the Gators, to go down the road to Miami and take, I guess, the reported $9.5 million. So, like,
that's going
to
hurt.
it wasn't money.
Yeah.
It was basically like, yeah, I know you're young. I know, like, every, you know, $100,000 is going to be really, really cool. Every $1,000 is really cool when you're 17. I mean, like, you know, every $100 is cool. Like, yeah, we're going to turn down $1.5 million just because, like, I don't get it. I don't like the vibe from this Florida team. Yeah, we're going to take less to go to Miami and hang out at the U.
The quote was that Florida is the most dysfunctional collective in college football. I plan on steering my clients away from them, and I never want to deal with them again.
Yeah.
that's embarrassing.
They've clapped back. You know, they released a statement themselves.
They basically came back and was like, hey, he's mad because we're not cheaters. Everyone else said everyone else is cheaters, and we're not cheaters.
I liked that they called him a – they made sure that they made it known that California lawyer – Michael Cuspino, too, so they can definitely turn their fans on some California lawyer.
Yeah,
very easily. That's a great spin zone by them. But they said the recent comments by California lawyer Michael Cuspino have been brought to our attention. Gator Collective has never had any communications with Mr. Cuspino about Jaden Rashada or any recruits. Rather, Gator Collective has refused to engage in any dialogue with him on numerous occasions, as Gator Collective does not approve of his tactics and has no interest in engaging in activities which violate Florida law and NCAA interim policy.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get what they're doing here. It's basically them, you know, controlling damage of saying, yeah, we're not playing his crooked game because we're on the up and up.
We're the good kids here.
AKA, keep in mind, this guy chose Miami, so, like, look at them, please, NCAA. Go down there and talk. About, was it John? Is it John Ruiz? Is that the name of the big Miami
Ruiz
power booster?
Yeah.
Go look at John Ruiz, who's just throwing out millions of dollars, basically by himself. Everyone else has collectives, and John Ruiz is like, nah.
Yeah.
I got me a billion. I got me some COVID money. I got me some crypto money. I'm good. I'm throwing out this money by myself. Mm-hmm. I am the booster. I am the collective. So we'll see, like, where this ends up with Miami. Miami's like, hey, yeah, full steam ahead. The NCAA is down there investigating them 2 weeks ago, and they had to answer questions, but apparently, like, they don't care. They just went out and, you know, bought a 4-star quarterback. Bring it on, says Miami.
Yeah.
Whatever. And again, it's not like you can call Florida broke. In the past, you've been able to say that, but if you're telling me they turned down $11 million to take $9.5 million to go to, like, a rival, I'm just going to say, yeah, maybe Florida's just not got their stuff together.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you already had, like, you already had Billy Napier having to come out and, like, put out statements to try to win back his fan base. Like, it's already reached a bad point. I'm not going to call it Brian Harsin level bad. You know, like, Brian Harsin versus the Auburn fans.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say it's at that level yet. But, like, Billy Napier hasn't even played a down yet. And everyone's kind of looking around like, oh, no, did we make a big mistake here? Did we make a mistake in hiring this guy? Is he a mid-major coach that isn't going to roll around in the mud and be ready to be at a big boy SEC level? Or did we make a mistake here?
Is he going to walk into his first SEC game with more pressure than any other SEC coach?
In terms of, like, being on the hot seat?
Like,
I mean, you might.
That,
I mean,
and the fan base just flipping automatically.
Well, like, Florida. Florida doesn't get made fun of the same amount that Tennessee does.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you go through and look, like, Florida's been low-key more or just as unstable as Tennessee has, I guess I'll say. Like, even going back to the end of Urban Meyer, like, that didn't go very well.
Yeah.
I guess maybe they've had higher highs. That's, and they've still,
for sure,
within their dysfunction, and within their dysfunction, they've still managed to beat us. And
yeah.
You know, within that same dysfunction, like, the one thing that people will always hold against Tennessee, obviously, is everything that happened with Shiano and Shiano Sunday. So, no matter how, you know, how much worse other programs get or how dysfunctional they get, Tennessee will still always be thought of as the program that was the biggest mess because of Shiano Sunday.
Yeah, just because that was so national, I'd say, like.
But, I mean, like, you know, you always see the numbers going out, like, of head coaches a number of years or something. But, like, Florida, you know, since 2010, this is going to be their, what, Urban, Muschamp, McElwain, Mullen, Napier. So, five coaches in 13 years, 12 years. Like, that's not stable. Five coaches in 13 years ain't a great number by any means. And it's not like they've even been bad. Like, Tennessee fans were getting made fun of for not being happy with, like, going 7-5, 8-4 with Butch Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, a 4-8 season, of course, ended that. But, like, Florida hasn't been happy with, like, winning the East twice with Jim McElwain. They fired him because of that.
Yep.
They, you know, fired Dan Mullen after, you know, having – I mean, Dan Mullen was there for 3 years. Their end-of-season ranking in all three of those seasons was 7, 6, and 13. Like, they were a top 15 team all three times. They were a top 10 team twice. I get that last year, you know, they were bad, but, like, they'd already made the decision to fire him by the time, like, the season had really gone off the rail. Like, they were mad at Dan Mullen coming again off of, like, finishing 7th, 6th, and 13th. Don't even get me started about how much they hated Mike White. They hated Mike White, like, 2 years after an Elite Eight. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying, like, they were wrong for hating Mike White, but they hated Mike White, you know, pretty much 2 years removed from an Elite Eight. So, like, Florida doesn't get made fun of the same path as Tennessee, and obviously the reason is evident. Like, again, I'm telling you, during their quote-unquote down years they're unhappy about, they're still finishing the season ranked in the top 10 a couple times.
Yeah.
They haven't had any real, I guess, extended disasters, but they have had two four-win seasons over the last, you know, since 2013.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they had two.
Yeah, and I mean, like, yeah, I guess we had two as well if you count the COVID year, but I'm not counting the COVID year.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have finished. We finished 3-7, but that was all SEC schedule. Like, if you give us three bought wins, like, that team still would have found a way to go 6-6.
Yep.
They finished 4-7 and 4-8 twice since 2013. So, like, and that 4-8 was, like, they were ranked number 10 preseason.
Jeez,
Yeah. So, like, it hasn't necessarily been stable at Florida, and they're always at risk, and you're always at risk in college football from having one bad hire really, like, just set your program back a decade.
Just torpedo it.
Because we know Florida didn't necessarily, like, recruit elite talent with Demo, and that's what they were so mad about.
Yeah.
And now you get here with Billy Napier, who is going to have to, like, answer this in a hurry, and again, I know we don't really talk about them in this way, but their fan base isn't necessarily forgiving.
No, not at all.
So, like, if Billy Napier has a bad year one, like, I don't know if he's going to get a bad year three. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be do or die in year two for him.
Yep.
Florida did get some positive buzz over the weekend.
What happened with them?
Anthony Richardson threw a football really far, and everyone got excited about it.
Okay.
Whoa.
Shout out to him. Good throw, Anthony Richardson.
No one.
Good throw.
No one loves quarterbacks throwing balls far more than casual football fans. If you can throw a football far, then you can be the number one pick in the draft and win a Heisman if you're a casual football fan. And that's what happened over the weekend.
I mean,
he didn't even win the ball.
Saw all this with Joe Milton.
Yeah, I don't think we have room to talk about that. That was the exact thing that won people over last year.
Yeah, hey, it didn't get us, Cam.
It didn't get us.
We
saw through.
I don't know if it got you. I did never hear what your takes on Joe Milton were.
I thought the Joe Milton takes were laughable. I didn't say whether or not I thought that, like, you know, Hendon Hooker was going to be better. I think at the beginning, me and Cam talked about that, and Cam stayed, you know, steadfast with it. And I was just kind of like, you know, Hendon didn't really, like, impress me either at Virginia Tech. So I was kind of like, we're kind of screwed regardless. Was kind of my take, but I definitely wasn't buying into the Cam Newton lookalike and arm strength things. Like, I saw enough from Joe Milton at Michigan to know better than that. But it was just like, I'm not sure if, you know, Hendon Hooker's some big savior.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think Hendon Hooker was a savior too.
I'm not going to take credit for being right, but I'm just going to say I wasn't fooled by Joe Milton. That was my take. I wasn't fooled by Joe Milton. And I was pleasantly surprised by Hendon Hooker. I think that's where I ended up.
But, he was at the Manning Passing Academy over the weekend. And in their long long throw contest, threw it very far. He didn't even win the long throw contest.
He didn't even win it.
Good throw.
That was my favorite. It was also, he technically overthrew the receiver that they had running the route for him, too. But it still got people pumped up, which
good for them.
Nick Toon was the one that won.
Who does he play?
Who the hell is Nick Toon?
I think he's a Big Ten.
Toon
he's
as in T-O-O-N?
T-U-N-E.
Okay. Not a damn Looney Tune.
Or
I'm not getting it. Okay, Nick Toon is a wide receiver from.
Then it was a different tune.
He played football at Wisconsin.
I know that tune. Yeah, I know 12. That's the one I thought of. But I was like, "There's one now."
I don't know who the hell it is. Point being, good job, Anthony Richardson. You threw the ball far. Proud of you.
Oh, man. Clayton Toon. Excuse me.
Okay.
The Houston quarterback.
Okay. Good job by you, man.
Okay.
Proud of you. But you know, Florida, not really a good weekend for them. Getting called broke. Not in the money sense of just like, no, your whole setup's broke.
Just a poverty system.
It's just broken. Yeah, like it's just like, nah, you got money now apparently, but we don't want it. We'll take less.
No good here.
To go to the U, which, I mean, it ain't like the Miami Hurricanes have had a better run over the last decade than Florida has. But I will say, like, Mario Cristobal being there might be the best thing for Tennessee football.
Mm-hmm.
I always talk about how we need USC. We need Texas, which maybe the Texas thing is less of a point now whenever you look at they're coming to the SEC. But, like, you need USC, Texas, and Miami to get back to recruiting at a high level because they're going to start, you know, poaching guys away from Alabama, Georgia, and, of course, Florida.
It looks like Miami's on a good upward trend, and that, you know, like you said, helps us in the grand scheme.
It's at least gonna weaken Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at the very least, like, Florida is going to lose out to Miami. Like, Miami is going to out-recruit them. As long as Mario Cristobal is there and they have some John Ruiz money backing them and the NCAA doesn't smack them down because they're Miami, like, Miami is going to punk Florida at every turn when it comes to recruiting just because Cristobal is a better recruiter. He has proven more at a bigger level. And you could tell me that Billy Napier is a great coach from Louisiana. I'm not going to argue. He was great at Louisiana. But, like, Cristobal's been great at Oregon. I'll take the guy who was great at Oregon versus the guy who was great at Louisiana.
Has he really been great at Oregon, though, or has he just been
I mean, he had a couple top 10 finishes. I mean, he had a couple top 10 finishes.
Yeah. He was having success out there.
I mean, he had Justin Herbert, so, I mean, like, you can say that, like—
He had Justin Herbert, but, like, he didn't do enough with Justin Herbert.
That's fine, but, I mean, like, he at least went to the Rose Bowl and had, like, a top 10 pick. Like, I mean, it's more than Billy Napier can say.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to
and
be
I agree that like recruiting is his biggest strength. That's always been his biggest strength is recruiting. So with that being his biggest strength already, and with the backing of Ruiz, yeah, I agree they should beat Florida at every turn. And maybe if Florida State can quit fooling around with recruiting battles with Jackson State and start actually, you know, playing with the big boys again, like that could be another instance with NIL potentially backing them of Florida getting beat by another in-state school. So
yeah. I just mean, like, you know, when he was at Oregon, I mean, they had – he went, what, 9-4, 12-2, COVID year, 4-3. I don't really worry about that. I mean, that's – they actually made a Fiesta Bowl somehow. And then 10-3. So, I mean, like, you know, he had 3 9-win seasons. To me, that's pretty good at Oregon. So, he at least has proven that he can lead a Power 5 program and, like, not be embarrassing. Like,
be a competent program.
Yeah, like, if he goes 9-4 at Miami, people are going to be like, happy at first, but then he's going to have to take a step. But, like, they would be happy with that. They'd be happy to, like, go 10-2 and to win the conference or win the division at least. Like, they're good with that, in my opinion. And I know that he can recruit.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting guys from the South to go to Oregon. Like, I know he's going to be able to keep some Florida guys, like, at Miami.
Yeah, I know
we're back to have right now, too.
I know we talked a lot about USC recruiting with Lincoln Riley being important for Tennessee and having that national recruiting, you know, being hindered a little bit that Alabama's been able to do and that Georgia's been able to do going out west. But I hadn't really thought about Miami being pretty important, too.
Yeah, you need both of them. You need both
but the
of
next
them
couple
Texas
years,
as well. But
the next couple of years, maybe you could finally see the momentum shift in the Tennessee-Florida rivalry series, whatever you want to call it, and Tennessee start to become the better program.
Again. That's the hope. If you can't pass, like, you know, like if it's not – I will say this is a unique situation. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is all going to be laughable come September 24th and then September 26th whenever we come back in here to do a show on Monday. Like, maybe this is all laughable, but, like, Florida hasn't really had extended periods of time down. They haven't really had extended periods of time where they haven't, like, been able to bounce back. Like, they pretty much have followed their four-win seasons. Like, they followed their four-win season with McElwain with a 10-3 by Dan Mullen the year after. They followed their 4-8 season in 2013 by getting back to 7-5 at least. Mm-hmm. Then 10-4 the year after that. But, like, I feel like Dan Mullen, Jim McElwain, and Will Muschamp – in their first years with the program, at least had some talent to build off of.
Yep, yep.
I don't know how much talent Dan Mullen's leaving, you know, Florida with. Like, he was a bad recruiter there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the top end isn't there to the same level as the last few guys.
Yeah.
Because they've all, I mean, all the guys have been good recruiters, bad football coaches.
Right.
And Mullen was the other way around, so.
So, like, I don't know if, like, you know, if it's going to be a seamless transition like they've been able to do in the past. Like, you're going to have a guy coming in here and that's going to have to do his culture and everything like a first-year coach does. But he's also going to have to, like, build up the roster. And that usually takes 2 or 3 years. And I understand it's easier in today's day to do that with, you know, transfer portal guys and all of that. But it ain't like they're getting those guys.
Nope.
They're losing guys instead.
Guys taking discounts.
I mean, do they even really have, like, some dogs on that team this year? I know some people are pretty high on Anthony Richardson, but
they have him, and, like, you know, maybe, like, you know, in the NFL, we know if you have an elite quarterback, like, you can win some games. In college football,
I don't even think Anthony Richardson's actually that good.
I don't know. Like, he's, you know, some people have him as top 10. Some people have him top 10, you know, draft pick, and if he can throw the football really far, maybe they'll still be fine, and who knows. But the Billy Napier era isn't off to a good start, and it's not like the schedule the first month is going to be very easy for them. Like, they play Utah. They can lose that game.
Yeah.
They play Kentucky. They can lose that game. They're coming to Knoxville. They can lose that game. It's possible they get off to, like, a 1-3 start.
That'd be incredible.
It would be incredible, and it's very possible. Like, at the very least, you know, like, you're almost like, hey, if you're a Florida fan, would you take 2-2 out of the first four?
It's incredible how important that Utah game feels to the tenure of Billy Napier. Because if they win that Utah game, it feels like all of a sudden then he'll have
cash. Everything's okay.
Yeah, everything's good. The fan base will chill out, and he would have captured a ton of momentum. But if they lose that game, then that puts so much more pressure, obviously, then on you to follow that up and go into Knoxville and win a game, or, you know, host a Kentucky team that's pretty good and win a game. And like you said, I think at best they're 2-2. After four games.
Well, the last couple of years I have sort of paid attention. And, like, first-year coaches don't usually fare well in their first, like, big game. Like, that's usually tough. Like, that's common sense. So, like, you have it with Utah, you know, Kyle Whittingham, who's been there forever.
Oh, we'll have him ready.
Who has his program ready to go. It's a national statement game for them versus a first-year coach. And
it's potentially a top-five team to start the year.
I don't. Are they that ranked that high preseason?
I mean, if you go look at, like, early top 25s, you can find Utah that high.
Like, I know the point spread was basically a pick 'em. It was, like, within two. So
it's,
like,
it's two right now, yeah.
But, like, I mean, like, you're seeing a guy that's had a program there for 20 years going up against a guy who's, like, in his first game, and that doesn't usually end well for the first-year coach. Doesn't usually work that way. That was a lot of Florida talk to start. But, like, hey, that's kind of where you know, we were talking about Tennessee's recruiting. Like, at least we ain't Florida right now.
ESPN's latest way too early top 25 has Utah number 6.
Okay. I didn't realize they were that high. I just saw the point spread and assumed they were like a mid. That game's at Florida, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, that game's at Florida.
Okay. So maybe that's why the spread is the way it is.
And again, it's still SEC.
Yeah.
Which that
I think people
carries
also
some weight from a betting perspective still, obviously.
Sure.
I think they also are playing in, like, the possible potential of Anthony Richardson being, you know, the top 5 draft picks. Some people have claimed versus, you know.
Right.
I mean, I see some other way too early top 25s have Florida at, like, the bottom of the top 25.
Let's go to break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Your heating and air system is the
I'm in that 745. Hope I can't come scoop you up round 745. Slide around with my drop top up or down, you down the ride. Looked into my eyes and told me, daddy, show you right. 7:45, 7:45. Hope I can't come scoop you up around 7:45.
So we will wait and see. We'll wait and see. Over the next week or so, we have some big-time five stars that should announce their destination. Hopefully Tennessee gets at least one of them.
What percentage do you put it at right now that Tennessee gets at least one?
I mean, I'm not a recruiting guy, but like it seems like you should feel like you have a 60 something percent chance to get the big offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. And I would say it feels like I don't know, when I see Texas A&M up there and he's wearing a cowboy hat, I'm like, that looks pretty cool. And they got a lot of money. They have a money cannon too.
Yeah, they do.
I don't take South Carolina seriously in that. Maybe I'm wrong, but like I just don't understand why a guy would come from Missouri to go to South Carolina of all places.
Yeah, that was what I noticed first. I saw the top three. I was like, one doesn't belong here, it seems like. But.
Yeah, like so I mean like I feel like of getting one, like I'd give Tennessee like a 70% chance. 75% chance of getting one.
I'd say that's probably fair. Who do you feel better about?
I feel better about Francis.
See, I feel better
the
about
offensive lineman.
Jindavian.
Okay.
Which I guess part of the thing with Francis was like his family, like you said, where they want to move away from home, but he is in Bradenton, Florida now. Like he is at IMG Academy now. So In a sense, he's already moved across the country. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that would make him better equipped to feel comfortable staying across the country and just 7 hours north.
Okay. I mean, I'm just kind of going off of some of the reports I read in terms of, you know, what they're talking about and the relationship that he would have with Nico.
If you don't land Francis either, you starting to feel a little bit disappointed with Nico's recruiting efforts?
I wouldn't blame Nico.
I wouldn't necessarily blame him, but you know, would there be part of you that would be a little bit disappointed just because the expectation was like, hey, you know, maybe he will bring a Carnell Tate or, you know, a five-star offensive lineman buddy or something of that nature?
I think that I would buy more into the idea that Tennessee is backing off of like being a leader in the NIL money situation more so than I would blame your quarterback. To me, like your quarterback, your five-star recruit, to me, he is simply something that gets your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And I think he got your foot in the door with a couple of big-time prospects. Like, he got your foot in the door with Carnell Tate. Like,
That would be my take. My expectation for Nico is exactly that, to help get your foot in the door, like you said, but just to get those guys around. And mm-hmm. Nico's made, like, four trips to Knoxville now, like five trips to Knoxville. He's been here on all those guys' trips. He's trying to build those relationships, and he's helped you get them there. You have to do the rest. So, I mean, I agree with you there. I didn't know if maybe you had a differing opinion.
No, mine would just be like, hey, you got to get your foot in the door, and having the elite talent got you there, and your coaching staff and your NIL collective or, you know, however you want to divvy up the credit or blame, didn't get the job done. But also, that's what happens when you're trying to recruit five-star players.
You got to close, yeah.
Five-star players aren't impressed that you gave them a lot of attention, right? Like, Tennessee has done really well with this coaching staff of hitting on some three-stars early on in the process, you know, Squirrel White, for instance, last year, that you weren't overly impressed with, but the longer the season went on and you start looking at, like, some offers and you start reading about some of the attention, like, Georgia really wanted him. And you're like, okay, like, he probably actually felt appreciated that Tennessee was in on him early.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, we're making you a priority. We really want you. We think you're a big-time player. We see it. We don't care about the rankings. We're doing our evaluations, and you are it. I would say he was impressed by that. But when you're recruiting five-star guys, like, everyone's giving them attention. You're not able to beat them by showing them love. Like everyone is going to show them love.
You really like me? You think I'm special? Right. You think I'm good? Yeah, I've been hearing that since I was in eighth grade.
Yeah. You're not here to save me, if you will. You're not here to give me a better life. You're not here to, like, make me feel special that, well, I could go to the SEC. Yeah. Really? I didn't dream about this when I was a kid.
You're not putting them in the spotlight. They're already kind of there. So like they expect to be there.
When you're a five-star, you look at, I would say, like, can I win a championship, but also, like, can I be a first-round pick? Like, mm-hmm. those are the only real things I would care about. Now you add in some NIL money, but, like, everyone's going to be, you know, pretty competitive there. And, if you believe the four-star quarterback that chose Miami over Florida, like, you don't always just go to the highest bidder. You look at it and say, well, you know, I've never seen Billy Napier coach a good quarterback into the NFL, mm-hmm. and I've seen Mario Cristobal get Justin Herbert there, and you know, whether or not you give Mario Cristobal that credit, like, at least if I'm that quarterback, I'd maybe take that in consideration. I'm like, yeah, I mean, at least, like, you got a guy in the top 10. But Napier's never coached a top 10 quarterback as a head coach. So, like, you know, it's when you're out here hunting for the big sharks or the big fish or the big game, whatever you want to look mm-hmm. at, a big moose. Everyone wants them. They're desirable. You're going for the top of the top. Those are harder to get, obviously. There are less of them to get.
Mm-hmm.
So when you spend a lot of time and you strike out, like, it is going to hurt, like, if Tennessee doesn't get either one of those. But
yeah.
It's a, you know, it's you're competing against the big boys, for the big boys. Which is nice,
yeah,
but
glad we're back in the ring, I guess. But
I'm glad we're back in the ring too. But it's kind of like I said last segment, Cam. Like, I don't give Tennessee credit for finishing second or third mm-hmm. with these guys anymore.
Yeah, you gotta get some punches in there.
And you did land a big time quarterback, and ultimately that is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
You did land the quarterback, and as long as you keep the quarterback, it was a success.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can win football games with an average roster and an elite quarterback, but not the other way around.
Hour one of the books. We'll kick off hour two of headlines as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.